town, the most focused and in many ways, but the most very rare presentations on child abuse in the history of the APHA conference. And that's part of what I wanted to talk with you about. I'm a child psychiatrist. My father was a child psychiatrist. He told me I talked too much. He's probably right. And what I'm going to say is, the first one is, yes, public health is increasing its involvement with child abuse rather dramatically. Public health nursing, most dramatically, I think. If you get in the home, you see the child. It's hard to think data and primary prevention. You're much more apt to do something. And working with more people, American Academy of Pediatrics, National Child Abuse and Neglect Data System, we heard about National Association of Medical Examiners in a webinar that had a whole bunch of people. But we're falling short. I worked for 20 years in public health, and I identify with it, and I'm also kind of frustrated with it. It's kind of like family or something that you get irritated with. I want to talk about the word intervention as opposed to data for primary prevention. That's most of what I'm going to talk about. And there's things that we need to address, but the larger community needs to change also. How many people know about Ambrose Tardieu? Unique, wonderful man, 1860. He made a very detailed description of fatal child abuse. And essentially, nothing happened. 105 years later, it was indexed in the medical literature. That's a bit of a cheap shot, but the fact is, we've been going fairly slowly, so I'm going to give you 10 examples of stuff that I think we can do with what we have, and if you call up all the crimson or red fonts, it'll tell you. One thing is the question of multi-agency data. It changes what you're doing. It's more vigorous, and it pushes you towards case management. For example, this would be a child, Eastern Sierra, California, supposedly falls off the sofa, has head trauma, medevac to the closest hospital, that's Reno, Nevada. So now you've got hospital records and an autopsy report, the child dies in Reno. You've got domestic violence, CPS, police reports in California. If you connect them, you end up in a different place than if you don't connect them. So two, you can find missing data. And one of the things that's missing is infant homicide records. What I found in LA County, we got 10 million people, is our infant homicide reports from the coroner's count are not the same as the vital statistic, Kevin. We lose about half of them, and same with San Bernardino, Sacramento County, but not Orange County, some other states, including this state, have it. And then I ran out of gas. This is going to be something from CDC to take over some of the pace more attention to data. So here's the numbers in LA County. We're losing about half of our infant homicides. Our count is different from the state, therefore the national statistics count. And here it is with infants are missing, but not the 1 to 17-year-old. What I think happens is they're a problem case. You get a kid 1 year old, you're gonna find something in the autopsy, there's a little more history. You get a 6-week-old, you just cover the kid's mouth and the kid's dead, doesn't show anything. See, this may spend 3-6 months, and by the time you finish and decide that some of them it's a homicide, it doesn't get sent up, or it gets sent up late, it doesn't get counted, I'm not sure. Oh, heavens, this is terrible. I've been working on this too hard to. Now, gonorrhea is a, STD in kids is another issue. What I was told is that the prepubescent female vagina is more anterior, different pH, and a thinner epithelium, therefore they get gonorrhea other ways. I think that's a question. Now here's the public health CDC data. The age down the center, 0 to 9 isn't counted. I suspect, if it's 0, I think it should, could say 0. I suspect it isn't 0. And then you notice that males on the left, females on the right, tends to be younger females and older males that have the disease. But by the time you're 65, females particularly hardly ever have gonorrhea. I know something about that. My body just doesn't do that so much anymore. Now, child gonorrhea by age, this is how we did it in LA County. Kids under age 13 with gonorrhea, this is 30, 50 kids a day, a year in LA County. And notice the peak between 3 and 7. All these cases would go to a public health nurse who would call to make sure a report was made. if the clinician said, oh, I'm sure we made a report, they'd make another one because that wasn't very solid. Again, get the test to cure, chase the kids. It's doing intervention. It is not just data for primary prevention. We're chasing the case, but remember that 3 to 7 peak. And it goes back up in adolescence and comes down with age. It's a bimodal curve. Half blacks. Blacks in LA County run fairly steady 10-12%. Incredible overrepresentation. Does that mean in the black population there's more disease, more tests, more reporting? We don't know because we aren't paying attention to these kids. Not particularly, except at local level some places. So you can also find something about birth date. You can find something about child abuse. In California, our legislature, irritated with the whole lot of us, said any evidence of sexual intercourse, one person under 15, the older over 21, mandatory report. And then they went back to sleep, and not much of anything changed. But let me show you. So here is a simple graph, but the problem with this graph is, this was harder to read, but it has individually years of age. This is from Vital Stats. It's a place in Seattle that puts this stuff up. If you look at the two little red rectangles to the left, that is a female 7 and 9 who are pregnant. The father's age on the birth certificate is listed as 25 to 29. If you look at the green one, dark green up in the level, both parents are 11. Now, if you have a baby when you're 11, that means you probably had sex when you're 10, which makes this confusing. And then at the top three over in the right, the top three red rectangles are females 22 to 34, and they say the father is 8, 9, and 10. So we can debate. It's coding error. These things can't happen. The fact is, we don't know what we've got, and there's some things we can do to make sense to them. Meanwhile, there's over 500,000 of these cases. This is 15 years California. The father's age is missing. Mother's age is seldom missing. And you've never seen this graph. I never saw it until I made it up. Day before yesterday. This is going from ages 9 to 21 females, whether or not the father's age was missing. As you go to younger kids, the father's name starts disappearing, I think after the age, something like that. And so by the time they're 10, 11, 12, 13, she's having a baby. This is not, she's pregnant. She has the baby at those age. And the father's name is and age is missing from the birth certificate. So how many births would we report? California would be about, I think, 500 a year, maybe another 1,000 from the unknown stuff. But we're a big state. And the fact is, you don't have to report. You have to have a relationship with the hospital, and you remind them that the law, something like that. But anyway, here's HIV. Gellert and Durfee, George Gellert, restless guy. We did a study of HIV and child sex abuse. Now I know LA County had a 5-year-old from San Diego who allegedly was sodomized by his father. He dies of HIV, and everybody's upset and running around in big and little circles. But the fact is, that case existed. But when we polled every HIV program for children in the country, we didn't get a case, we didn't get a protocol, and people don't like those two things. Sexual abuse of kids, HIV, either one of those can wear you out. Now the child sex abuse people were coming up light in this time. They didn't like the two themes either, but they were following the kids more, or something was different. They could tolerate the thought. Oh heavens. So we end up with 28 cases, most about two-thirds female, most of them black, average is age 9. It's something like half of these kids were black females, 8 to 12. And there's some more literature on this, but not much. And it's as if we can, if we're real quiet, it'll go away, I guess. This, I'm really proud of this one. We, hospitals, talking to themselves and each other can drive the system. They're much better targeting individual physicians. They just are for many reasons. We started with 6 scan teams, this is 1980, and we ended up with 35 hospital teams 5 years later. Now my data on what was happening is problematic. It was poorly collected. But I'll tell you, the foster care system was impacted. I'd get complaints from the court, where are these kids coming from? I'd say, well, we're looking for them now. And here's what happened with the reports. Reports are going up in these years, is 80 to, well, we're 97 on the right, but in the 80s, we're going up around 12-13% nationally, just because we were waking up to child abuse. The yellow is 15%, the red is 30%, the blue is what we got, reports. We went from 50 a month to 100 to 200 to 400 to 500. 1,000% increase in 5 years. And so maybe it wasn't 1,000, maybe it was really 200%. It's rather impressive. And this is what the data on the kids did. We had it by age and gender. So if you look at most reports were infants and young toddlers going down, physical abuse, neglect, and other is emotional abuse. We had some emotional abuse reports on infants. I like that. Now notice the curve with the STD, with the sexual abuse on the blue line. It's similar to what we saw on the gonorrhea in kids. And my experience as a clinician interviewing little kids is that sexual abuse commonly begins around age 3, 4, 5. And it may decrease with time. And now you think we're getting sicker and sicker and more dangerous people that say, I can't have sex with a child who's 10. That's too old. I'm not sure what all that means. I got some theories, but whatever. And then this curve on the right started appearing. I said, who's messing up my graph? It was a WIC program that was interviewing and reporting young mothers. I can also tell when I call a hospital and say someone had gone on vacation because they stopped reporting. So now we've got the California model. This is what I'm doing now, most of my activities. There's about 1,000 child death review teams in at least 8 nations. I started that. I'm particularly proud of that. But the child has to die, and that's wrong. So there's a growing, a growing number of states that besides looking at dead kids, they're looking at non-dead kids, trying to figure out what to do with the non-kids, dead, severely injured kids. And we've got about 40 hospitals in California doing a system. Our network of hospitals covers the vast majority of our injuries. It's about the equivalent of 10% of the kids in this nation. We have 28 pediatric intensive care units, 300 beds. Actually, it's higher than that, but I have trouble believing it. So I'm trying to put it down a little bit. And the child doesn't have to die. And we have 2 data systems. So here's the hospitals that tend to be in urban areas and close to the beach, which has to do with something else, healthcare. Now here is the hospital discharge data. This is the first system we have. So we got 31,000 kids over a 5-year period, 1,456 of what I call MAL. That's basically maltreatment, except the code doesn't say that. I use codes that say abuse, neglect, assault. And since I'm looking at kids, it's child abuse, neglect, assault. And those kids have an average stay of 10 days in the hospital, cost almost 71,000, and their black-white ratio, just black kids over white kids, is 22-23. The middle is the undetermined, they're 6 days, similar ratio. The youngest is, the other kids that are left, they stay short and they have a different ratio. I don't know what this means. I'm mostly using this because I want hospitals to get excited about child abuse. And so one of the other things we're finding is that tell hospitals how many cases they have of these different categories. And then we find a rate that varies dramatically. One big medical center, it's 0.5% of all their kids injured under age 3 hospitalized. Another one is 15%. And that has to do with coders, but I think it also has to do with clinicians and what they do with such things. So, and then our internal data set, which is the point of the whole thing, I think, is we ask the hospital to count their kids under age 3 injured. That's tied to money, so the computer will give that to them. And then we're saying, you look at those turquoise blue things, if they do infants, 1 and 2 year olds, and then total, the computer will give that to them. And then we're saying for infants, 1 and 2 year olds, tell us how many you made out of child abuse report. Sounds easy, it's real hard, because they can't find or read the child abuse reports. They're all over the hospital, they're locked up in a filing cabinet. The way hospitals manage child abuse is you made the report, take care of it. You made that report, you take care of it. They count parking spaces. Well, heavens, wait a minute. Anyhow, now it's your turn, some of you anyway, to add intervention. Join the violence prevention, family violence prevention forum. When you raise your hand, the lady over there is going to have to sign you up for you if you want to. And it's free, and you find other people in this wonderful public health thing that want to do this stuff. And there's my final slide. Don Quixote was really chasing silence. A lot of people don't know that. At any rate, have we got a question? Any questions on this? Okay. Any questions on anything? Yes.
Actually, I had one on one of your slides. It was kind of interesting. There is such a high ethnic and racial disparities with child maltreatment, child abuse. It was interesting, if I saw that right, for a hospital cost, it was 0.22.
No, that was the ratio. That means a higher percentage of those kids were black. And the hospital cost goes up. And the reason I chased that was I want people's attention. And if I say this costs you money, and if you don't do something with it, the kid can come back. The hospitals that have taken that data system and tried to work with it all have headaches, but they all found major problems. One hospital, a pediatrician who's working the thing, went to another pediatrician and said, was reading the case. What are you doing in my case? I know child abuse, get out of here. And, well, but you didn't chart why you didn't report. The injuries don't make sense until you told me which. Anyhow, they're basically not getting along with each other. About 2 weeks later, the irritable pediatrician had the integrity to say, I sent a kid home, and he came back almost dead. His father beat him into a coma. I want you to read my charts. There is no decent quality control for child abuse in hospitals. So a person comes in or leaves, and child abuse goes up and down depending on who's there. There's a study that we use part of our handouts that you compare hospitals that are fairly well structured, children's hospitals, general hospitals, same type injuries. These hospitals are something like 40% lower. We're talking about a massive number of kids. Remember that thing I've got where you have teams and your reporting just explodes, that we're missing. And that one of the ways to find them is thinking logically about numbers, which is what these guys do for a living and do it much better than the average clinician, I think. And we'll start tying them together, but just if only for Rebecca's baby, then we start tomorrow. Not 5 years from now when the economy turns around. Yes.
I want to ask a question about your child injury review teams. We talked about doing that in the child advocacy teams in Florida, but we're having trouble dealing with the issues of agency confidentiality and reporting, and we're not making progress in getting that kind of...
When child death review teams were started, California's, 78, early 80s, there were three things we did not do. We did not pursue money. That'll screw things up. We did not look for lines of authority, because no one was asking us to do it, and we did not get a legal opinion. There are laws that say if people are, we're a different group, we're all working with the same kid, we can so talk to each other. I mean, it just, that is what the law says. We don't talk to each other, But the same reason we didn't listen to Ambrose Tardieu, we being everybody, for 105 years, actually 110, that's an infanticide theory. This is not just a scientific issue. And what I think, when you go for prevention, intervention, when you say, are you reviewing non-fatal cases? No, that's a common response. This is now no longer a technical issue, it's a cultural issue. Is it okay to review these cases? Here's a dilemma. Do you protect records? Do you protect people? Do you protect confidentiality? Whatever it is, a legal opinion we had just in the air, he didn't write it down, he said, if you share confidential material, you have a potential liability, pause. If you don't share confidential material and a child is injured, you have a potential liability. And I think that's where it's going to end up. The first, anybody here from Rochester, New York? Rochester, New York had a non-fatal review decades ago. I was so excited. And this guy says, I know I'm going to get a grant, do it right. He gave it to one pediatrician, gave it to a female pediatrician who had a baby and the program disappeared. It shouldn't have happened that way. You can talk to each other. We don't want to. Guys got some comments on any of this? Any other questions?
I would make a comment, I was at Philadelphia, that what we, the frequent statement around our child death review team is kids die with their confidentiality on.
Oh.
And it is a barrier, it has to be broken, and the methodology in our world with too many lawyers is going to be very tough, but I think it's something that will come out of the Family Violence Prevention Forum, a method to make it happen.
Well, and Pat's an interesting person anyway. Pat helped start the child death review for the state of Colorado. She moved here, got bored, I guess, built the same program here, and then she built a program. It was domestic violence fatality review followed this. Child death review teams do not have a timeline. Some of them do, but we try not to have a timeline for when you review a case. We had a child die that morning, we reviewed in the afternoon. Charleston, South Carolina review all their cases almost always within a week. The partner abuse waits for old cases because they don't want to interfere in the legal system. I'm not sure what it is. So she set up a system to look at all deaths of all females 15 to 64. How come this woman has fell off this bridge in the middle of the winter? What was she doing up there and then fighting? I mean, she's at least tripled the partner homicides, I think. They're looking at something. It's a measure of us. Do we want to do this? How many people have been to a child death review team? Oh, bless your hearts. You haven't been, you should go. I like the way you think. You go there and get them thinking about the whole thing. Because the rules are, what do you know, what do you know, what do you know, what do I know? Well, if you knew about the domestic violence and you had a previous injury, you knew about the other child deaths, and, oh, we don't talk to each other. So you go back to the slide of the jigsaw puzzle, put the kid together. Our cases, by definition, have many more problems and resources than we know. And some of that's just part of the deal. It's still 24-hour days, and I don't know what your funding is, but ours isn't that good. How many people are a member of the Family Violence Prevention Forum here? Oh, good stuff. Well, there's some of the rest of you.
Look at all the potential.
Oh, it is, it is. Because what happened is, yes, I go and I yelling at some real nice people working with HIV, and then some of them come join us, stay where they are, and they start tying things together. I got to talk to you afterwards because you're interested.
And the good news about the forum is it is multi-dimensional, it's a very diverse group,
We have members of all sections of APHA recognizing that alcohol, tobacco, other drugs, those legal exchange, drinking cessation, family violence, HIV, does legal exchange, family violence prevention, MCH does breastfeeding, family violence prevention. Every section has some people interested in some way in family violence, although
but you had it. I love your.
Yeah, I was wondering if anybody else, he's been talking about silos and child abuse. I finally, after two years, and I'm part of Children's Hospital Research Center in Oakland, which is a regional pediatric trauma center, and Alameda County Child Welfare, after 2 years, finally got a business agreement so we can share data, because we work with a lot of our programs, and I'd like to sort of know a basic thing, are interventions making any difference? And I wanted to know more about their data, because I found out with their data, they have this very big system, and it has interesting defaults. You know, like most of us have defaults that are like missing 99 or something, so you know it's missing. Well, some of their defaults are actually an active value, and it's still tabulated, which, look at CDC gentleman who's whimsy, it's sort of like, sort of, if that's you, I'm gonna get something up. If that's you, if you're a smoker, you should put, you know, yes is one, and no could be zero. The default is one. They have all this all through, and they're using those data. And one of the reasons I wanted a business agreement is because when they did a little bit of a tabulation, and we actually had folks that actually did the intervention in the room, they were appalled that nothing ran true. And they found out that part of it was the defaults that are built into the system. And I'm just curious, of all of you who are using that kind of data, which is, I think, the data goes to NCANS, is that something that's typical?
Well, if you follow science and logic, you end up one place. Alameda County has a child death review that was based in part because Child Protective Service and the coroner shared a parking lot. And they sort of knew each other, so the introduction went faster. And they've done some pretty good stuff, but they don't get data. Child Protective Service doesn't have outcomes to tell you, except it's in the newspaper, and so the Sacramento Bee has been frying, and if you do a Google search, child death review, child fatality review, you find these things, and your county, if you haven't had an indictment, you're going to have one, because people say, how can that kid die? And they go one place, Child Protective Services. Hospitals are a much better target, but then you got to mess with doctors, and it's easier to beat up than those social workers who work with poor people. 60% of the child death review teams, at least 60%, were built by females, commonly not so important as the male that they got to be the chair so other males would come. And that has to do, to start a team, you have to do things like arrange your room in the morning, you should get coffee and you say thank you. And that is, apparently we can do it in a pinch, but the Y chromosome doesn't do that as well. If you throw your education out once in a while and say, what is the problem here? You'll see something that isn't much fun to see, and that is that we are territorial, everybody's got silos, we all have problems. But I need to talk to you now even more. Anything else? Questions, answers? We all leave singing the theme song to save the children. We are the children, that's the one anyway. But thank you for coming. You got some more questions? We'll hang around here for a while and answer. There's another presentation coming up after this that will be here, I think. Is that right? Same thing, Family Violence Prevention Forum. Bring friends.
Thank you.